You know, Mr. Rogers was fond of saying that when disaster strikes, look to the helpers and be comforted in realizing there are so many caring people in the world. And we're speaking with one of the helpers next about her experiences in assisting people after some very major events, 9/11, terrorist attacks, big natural disasters like Hurricane Katrina. I'm Larry Mueller, and my guest now is Debbie McKenney. In the studio with me, she's written a book about what it was like to be in the midst of some horrific disasters. The book is called Bringing Hope, A Disaster Relief Journey. She did this journey through her work with the Red Cross. Maybe you've volunteered to help with a disaster, and I'm wondering how it maybe affected you. I hope you'll join in the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Debbie McKenney, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
I found the book very interesting. I learned a lot about you, but I also learned a whole lot about the Red Cross and how it operates, and it was really fascinating for me to learn those things. How did you become a volunteer with the Red Cross? Talk about that.
Well, it started actually when I was young and a single mother. My children were 1, 3, and 5, and I was blessed to have a lot of family, friends, the church, the parish priest provide help to me as I was getting on my feet. And I knew someday I would be able to pay it forward. Maybe I wouldn't be able to help those people back specifically, but somewhere down the road I wanted to help. And when I was working at Marquette University in 1992, I was reading the staff newsletter, and in the back of the newsletter there was a little sentence that said, disaster volunteers needed at the Red Cross. And by then, the children were a little bit older. I was remarried and ready to take on a new adventure. So I started volunteering on the disaster action team 1 week a month at night, from 6 at night to 6 in the morning, helping families who've had fires in the Milwaukee area and make sure they had food, shelter, and clothing. And it became a passion. I was never dreamed when I joined the Red Cross as a volunteer what that journey would become for me.
Yeah. What skills do you need to become a disaster volunteer?
Compassion, caring, good communication skills help, and just a desire to help your fellow citizens.
I bet that first call was something for you. What was that first call like?
Well, that was pretty scary. The first, you go to the Red Cross chapter on 20th and Wisconsin, and they suit you up with steel-toed boots and a hard hat. And then they, at that time, it was a pager, put a pager on your waist and waited for the first call, and we would respond to anywhere from 3 to 7 fires a week. Well, the first 3 nights, there were no calls, and I was just so anxious to get called and go, and nothing was happening. But when it did, boy, I learned what an adrenaline rush was. Your heart starts beating and jump out of bed in the middle of the night and put on your jeans and red jacket and off you go to help. And, it's a wonderful feeling being able to help others.
You started volunteering, as you said, in Milwaukee, and then you moved to Washington County, which is a lot more rural.
Yes.
Did the volunteering change there? I would expect it did.
In fact, it changed.
I remember it did.
Yes, it did change somewhat. The city of West Bend, when we volunteered or responded to fires there, that was fairly similar. But being more rural, there were barn fires. And inside a barn is a lot of hay. And when hay starts burning, it burns all night long. So when you get called to a barn fire, we would take our large disaster van and make sandwiches for the firefighters all night long, make sure they had hot things to drink and food to eat throughout the night. And they would last all night.
You know, I think everybody listening, we've all heard about the Red Cross. And tell us about, give us a little history of it. How did it started and the mission of the Red Cross?
Well, the Red Cross actually started back in the International Red Cross back in World War I. when there was a need, Henri Dumont, and I'm sure I'm not saying his name correctly, saw a need to help the soldiers to make sure that they were treated fairly, especially the prisoners of war. And it wasn't long after the United States got on the bandwagon and got the American version of the International Red Cross. And so it has a long, proud history of helping and nursing and providing blood.
And you started with, let's say, local kinds of disaster help, but then you, I don't know if graduated is the right term, but you were inspired to help with national disasters.
Yes, the local volunteering is awesome. And as a new volunteer, that was exciting. But then when tornadoes happened or flooding and I would hear and see other volunteers responding, I wanted to be a part of that. I wanted to be able to help on a bigger scale. It's when we see and hear about disasters happening around us, for many of us, there's a natural inclination to want to help. And I was compelled to help and was fortunate to be able to get the training and skills I needed so when there were disasters, I would be able to respond.
And the Red Cross does provide quite a bit of training.
Yes, all the training, and it's free to the volunteers.
Yeah, and here's your first national experience was 9/11.
Yeah, how do you say no to that?
Yeah, I wonder what your thoughts were when you got that call.
Well, I was so excited to be able to help. I mean, we all watched the news. We stood in horror in front of our TVs that day and watched the World Trade Towers come down. And then we wanted to help. We wanted to do something. We needed to do something. And for many people, all we can do is donate, which is great. That's necessary. But I, like I said, I was blessed to have the skills already that I was able to go and get the call and go to respond, take 3 weeks vacation from work, and went to Washington, D.C. and spent 3 weeks on the phone with those who lost loved ones.
It must have been. What was it like going through, even right from the beginning, going through security after that attack?
Well, it was different. I think the thing that stand out in my mind most of all, first of all, when you're going to a national disaster with the Red Cross, you get a one-way ticket. You don't get a round-trip plane ticket because you don't know exactly when you're returning. And right after 9/11, if people had a one-way ticket, immediately security was, you were looked at differently because why do you only have a one-way ticket? Aren't you coming home? So that would automatically cause you, well, I shouldn't say automatically, but likely cause you to have your luggage searched, and mine was. And to watch, I was always been an avid reader, and I had a lot of paperback romance books with me and in my suitcase, and watch the TSA scan through every single paperback book. And I was like, what are you looking for? And he said, well, people glue the pages together and hide stuff in there. And I'm thinking, my mind doesn't even work that way. You know, to me, it's just a paperback, not a place to hide something. And then the gentleman right behind me was a soldier, and I'm sure he, too, had his one-way ticket, and he had his duffel bag packed full to the brim, and they dumped the whole thing out. And I felt so bad for him because I'm sure he had carefully packed everything. And, yeah, security was tight. Soldiers were in the airports with guns. It was a different time.
What are some of your, first, what were your responsibilities when you got there? You had specific role that you were to play.
Yes, my role was a caseworker, and a Red Cross caseworker works one-on-one with the clients, not victims, there are clients, and in this case, with 9/11, it was the families who lost loved ones. So I was either calling the families or they were calling me and a group of us. I wasn't alone, certainly. And we would talk to them. And so many people had been donating so much money. I was blessed to have the role of getting the money people were donating directly to the clients. So I would talk with the families who lost loved ones, find out what their financial needs were for the next couple months. And it was very emotional talking to the families. They had been through a lot, and they had a need to share their stories and did a lot of listening.
And that must have been even difficult at times.
Very difficult at times. Some of those calls brought me to tears.
Yeah, I would absolutely imagine that. How does the Red Cross determine? I suppose it's somewhat based on the amount of money that they receive, but...
Well, it is, and that's certainly not my function. There are people much higher up who make those decisions. I pretty much followed what I was told to do. But it does depend. Certainly the more donations people make, the more help can be provided to the clients. So donations are always welcome.
And what was a day like for you?
Well, days in the Red Cross start with meetings. So the first thing, we would get to the headquarters. I was in Washington, D.C., not New York. And we would find out what's currently happening. Are there any changes to any of the forms? What new policies are being created? Sometimes they'd let us know, okay, I was there 3 weeks after 9/11. So we were now talking to family members who have come to terms, or started to, that their loved ones would not be found alive. And so they were starting to plan memorial services, and the Red Cross was helping with those services. So a typical day would be starting in a meeting to find out what's new. Nursing staff would remind us to take care of our health, because if we don't take care of ourselves, we can't help the clients. Mental health would remind us to take time and for ourselves, to refresh ourselves in between phone calls. And then just spend time on the phone with the families. And they would call and ask for what financial support we could be provided to them in the interim until their finances became stabilized.
And there were a whole lot more connected with that. Debbie McKinney is our guest today. She was an American Red Cross volunteer for over 20 years, served as a disaster action team member and team leader. And it was, for me, very interesting reading her book. It's called Bringing Hope. And we'll continue talking with her right after this look at the news. Stay with us. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, talking about the experiences of a volunteer during disasters. And our guest is Debbie McKinney. She was an American Red Cross volunteer for over 20 years, served as a disaster action team member, and she was a team leader as well. She was the disaster chair in Washington County, Wisconsin, and a board member. She's written about her experiences as a Red Cross volunteer in her book. It's called Bringing Hope, A Disaster Relief Journey. You may have some questions about volunteering during national disasters, or maybe you volunteered yourself. What have been the effects for you? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And we started by talking about some of your local experiences, and then 9/11. Maybe spend a minute or two more on 9/11. Just some of the experiences you had there, some of the individual experiences maybe you could comment on that you had with people.
Well, the couple significant things I recall about my talking with families after 9/11, and my book is written in a journal format, so as I would go to these disasters, I kept a daily journal because my family, friends, colleagues back home wanted to know what I was doing, and I would keep a journal, so I remember very clearly October 7th. It was started as a typical day. We had our morning staff meeting, and then I took a phone call from a woman, and she had lost her husband in the World Trade Center, and his body parts had been delivered to her on numerous occasions, and I can't imagine what the police officers with the Port Authority had to go through to let the families know when they discovered body parts. And his parts were identified, his pants were identified by the label in the pants, so they knew his legs, that's who that belonged to, and they had had a funeral for him. Meanwhile, another family, a Jewish family, had received their loved ones' parts of that body and also held a funeral. The individual had their body parts cremated. Well, it turned out some of the parts got mixed up. There were thousands, over 20,000 parts that were found. And now this woman I was speaking with, shortly before I talked to her, the Port Authority had come again and identified his arm based on the wedding ring. And she didn't know whether to plan another funeral now. And that was, she didn't know how to approach his family and say more of him was found. I mean, they were already on antidepressants and trying to deal with this whole situation. That was a very emotional phone call for me. And fortunately, the Red Cross has mental health workers, not only to help the families going through the trauma themselves, but to help us as volunteers. And at the end of each day, we would have a debriefing session where we could talk about what we had dealt with during the day. But after that phone call lasted about 45 minutes. I mean, you just can't even imagine how emotional that was. And I held myself together throughout the phone call. But as soon as it was done, I got up and I left my workstation, walked away, and went to the bathroom and just sobbed and sobbed and went outside for a walk. It was a beautiful day, and I walked down the hill to a deli. I wasn't even hungry, but I just needed to go somewhere. And there was a TV on outside their deli up on the wall, and everyone was standing around, and I thought, now what? You know, is there another attack? Well, the war had started, and at that time, my daughter was in Bosnia serving in the Army, and so here I go from this emotional phone call to now worrying, my daughter's in Bosnia. Where is Bosnia in relation to Iraq and Iran? And is she going to be called up to war? She was at a peacekeeping base in Bosnia, but, you know, that could change in a heartbeat. So that was October 7th. Boy, that was quite an emotional day for me.
And, you know, it wasn't too long after your experience with in Washington that Hurricane Katrina hit. And that was a different kind of experience in many ways, but also similar, too.
Yes. Hurricane Katrina, well, certainly less emotional than 9/11 was. And we all saw on the news what was happening in New Orleans. And when I got called, well, when you get called, you don't know exactly where you're going to go. I didn't know if I was going to New Orleans, somewhere else along the coast. And so they have you start to pack. And in that case, they didn't know, was there going to be power anywhere, electricity, what was the food situation? So as a volunteer, we needed to pack not only enough clothes, but to make sure we had water, food for a couple days. I mean, there's a lot of packing to do when you're going on these trips. Try to fit in a sleeping bag somewhere and then be able to carry everything.
Yeah.
And I ended up volunteering at we were staying at a church in Laurel, Mississippi. And I'll tell you what, coming from the north and going to the south is a different experience. And I'd heard of Southern hospitality, but had never experienced it, and that was something else. Like, we have bars on every corner in Milwaukee. There's a church on every corner in the south. And I was staying at a Presbyterian church, and the other churches would get together, and they'd volunteer to do our laundry for us. Others cooked for us once a week. It was incredible to watch the community come together, not only for their own citizens, but to help us as volunteers so that we could better serve their residents.
You know, what was interesting to me, and I had no idea, the Red Cross works well in advance of anything even happening around throughout the country. They have things set up, like the churches, for example, agreements with the churches.
Certainly. The Red Cross is all about preparedness. You don't often see that on the news. So as disasters begin to wrap up, we know when hurricanes are coming. We see them for days or weeks. And the Red Cross has agreements with churches, with different county fair buildings, places that might be needed. There are tractor trailers set up all over the country filled with cots and blankets, and there's one tractor
trailer. They're just sitting there.
Whole IT systems that can be taken somewhere in a moment and deployed to where it's needed.
That was really interesting. And obvious, after I thought about it, I thought, well, of course they would have to have something like that. They couldn't start organizing after the event itself. You have to be ready in advance.
Yes.
To take care of this.
So when we got down to Laurel, Mississippi, and we were staying in a church gymnasium, there were 55 of us sharing this gymnasium as roommates, and all those cots were there, set up, ready for us, in addition to all the clients that had already been assisted, providing shelter for the families evacuated.
Yeah, amazing. Well, let's take some calls. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Ann in Green Bay up now. Ann, thank you for calling.
You're welcome. You said you did this for 20 years. You volunteered. I don't mean to be nosy, but how is it you could afford this?
That's a great question. As a volunteer, you don't have to afford anything. Fortunately, the Red Cross is prepared, and the Red Cross provides assistance to the volunteers to make sure that you get transportation to the place where you're going to be helping those who have been affected. They provide you a per diem for meals. It's certainly not luxury living by any stretch of the imagination, but it's sufficient for meals, to do our laundry, depending on where you go, if you need to get a cab to a location. So fortunately, as a volunteer, you are not expected in any way to put forth any of your funds other than my own personal vacation time I took from work.
Yeah, I would think that would be where the problem might be for some people, at least for national volunteering.
Right.
The ability to have enough vacation time, or also I would say a spouse who is willing to step back and let the his wife or her husband take off and do this.
That certainly makes a difference, having the support of a spouse. I'm fortunate. My husband is very self-sufficient. Other volunteers, when they go to disasters, they talk about how many frozen meals they've left for their husbands. I didn't do that for mine. He's pretty good at taking care of himself.
Pretty understanding. Let's go to Rita in Middleton next. Rita, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I turned onto your program a little late here, but when I heard American Red Cross, my ears perked up because recently, well, I retired 4 years ago, and I have been donating platelets at the Red Cross, and it's a little longer procedure than just donating whole blood. It takes up to 3 hours maximum, and I see a lot of retired people sitting in the chairs donating, and I am just so impressed by the staff there, how kind they are to us, and you know, they wrap you in blankets and give you your chocolate milk, and when you leave here in Madison, Panera Bread Company donates bread to people who volunteer. So it's another way. I don't know if this is specific to the Red Cross, the program, or just volunteering, but it's a wonderful way to spend my time, and knowing that I could help 2 to 3 people with my donation of platelets.
Oh, good for you, Rita. Comment, Debbie?
Yes. I'm not sure that feeling good about volunteering is specific to the Red Cross, but it certainly fed my soul for a long time. And just being a volunteer, there's a chapter in my book on volunteering, and no matter how you can volunteer to help someone, just makes you feel good, and you experienced that in the blood donation center when those around you were comforting you. It helps us to volunteer. It makes us feel proud and good and honored to help others.
Yeah,
it does. I have done 14 medical missions to Nicaragua also.
Oh my gosh.
And by doing that, I was given the ability to bring children back to stay with us in our home who received medical care in Wisconsin because they could not get it in their home country. So, you know, what goes around comes around, and it's just, it's amazing how your life is enriched when you just open up your heart and your home to people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much, Rita.
And you're welcome.
Yeah, and thanks for what you have volunteered and the work that you have done. Talking again, just to remind you, Debbie McKinney, our guest today, she is the author of Bringing Hope, A Disaster Relief Journey. And Debbie, as you were mentioning earlier, it's your book is really most of it is a journal, probably a little reworking of the journal that you put together on these various places that you visited. And then you just mentioned, too, that you have some other chapters that are, I think, helpful for people in terms of volunteering.
Well, as I was writing the book, I mean, first of all, I never planned on being an author. This has all taken me quite by surprise. And I didn't keep these journals as I was volunteering for any specific reason other than that family and friends would know what I was doing as a volunteer. But as I started helping my oldest granddaughter, Paige, apply to college at UW-Madison, we spent a lot of time in the car together, and I realized that my grandkids don't know the length of my involvement with the Red Cross. And so I went to a conference. A friend actually took me to the Wisconsin Writers Association conference in October of 2015, and she said, "Debbie, just come along and bring some of your poems. You've written some poems." Well, I don't know if they were much of anything, but I did go to the conference with her. She was an award Jade Ring winner, and people there would say, "Well, Debbie, what genre do you write?" And I'd like, "What genre? I don't write any genre. I did a couple poems, but I've done these journals after volunteering." And people would say, "Well, you need to write a book. You need to write a book." And so I went to the next conference a year later and went back and said, "Well, okay, you told me to write a book. Now I've done it. Now what?" I didn't know anything about getting published or what my next steps were. So fortunately, I became a part of the Marine Writers Guild in Keewaskum. And one of the women there, Lisa Lickle, became my editor, mentor, and friend, and just really helped me through this writing process. So it is in the form of journals that I kept as I was volunteering. And here I am now, a published author. I certainly wasn't expecting this, but it's been a wonderful journey.
Oh, and I know you have some readings and so forth coming on. We'll talk about them in a minute, but I want to go back to Katrina, just because I think it was, in so many ways, different from the 9/11 experience, and also the fact while you were still there, Hurricane Rita struck, and that had some effect on your relief efforts.
Well, it did. I was, after Hurricane Katrina, I was doing casework like I did after 9/11 in a different setting. We were out in the community in a county fair-like building. We were serving four different counties. And just to give you a perspective of what happens, now, Laurel, Mississippi, where I was, is 100 miles inland from the coast. So when we saw New Orleans, the media wasn't really showing much else. And when a hurricane comes, it's spinning in circles, as we know, and it doesn't stop spinning in circles just because it hits land. It keeps spinning, and that spawns tornadoes. So in the community where we were helping families, in one of the counties, on one day, there were more than 24 tornadoes. So just imagine in your community what kind of damage that would do. So I was working in this fair-type building, and the clients were coming to us. And they would sit down with us, and they would tell us what had happened to them and their homes. One boy was standing in his living room, and the whole house shifted on the foundation, and he watched the basement fall in. And from his 9-year-old perspective, he was pretty excited about the whole thing. So he was quite a trooper through that event. Not everybody saw it in quite that same light, but for his experience, it was an exciting day.
And actually, just driving around, you know, you did have a chance to, you get a day off.
Yes.
And that's important.
Yeah, the day off, took one of the days off and went to the coast. So when you're volunteering with the Red Cross, you're working 7 days, and then you may get a day off, and I did. And another volunteer and I drove down to Gulfport, and Gulfport was destroyed. I mean, it's right on the coast. And walking through a city after a disaster like that, now I was there 3 weeks after, it was eerily silent. And there were no people on the street. There were no glass in any of the windows. And you could just hear this tap, tap, tapping of a piece of metal on a roof somewhere. And that was the only sound on this beautiful day that we were walking through. And then we drove along the coast, and you could see all these stairs to nowhere. So the houses were gone. They were, who knows how many miles or where this debris was, but you could just see stairs after stairs after stairs of where you knew homes had once been. It was incredible. And then we stopped the car, and we got out and took a walk on the beach. And I've always wondered, not living near the coast, what kind of things wash up on the sand after a storm. And so we went and walked to the beach and took a look, and there were telephone poles floating, and there were plastic lawn furniture, and then there were bones. And I never did find out what these bones were from, but there were hundreds of them just scattered in like 15, 20 feet across the beach. And I don't know if they were turkey or dolphin or what, I have no idea, but it was incredible. There is a photo, not a great photo, but there's a photo of that in the book.
There was also an interesting photo. I thought, you have to be a little ingenious sometimes when you're a volunteer, and there was a stepladder.
Yeah, our shower. That was pretty great.
Your shower. Just explain that. It was kind of fun.
So we're staying at this church in Laurel, Mississippi, and there's 55 of us, and it's hot and it's humid, and they did not have shower facilities. So someone creative in this little courtyard of the church put up a plywood wall. And there was this red paint-splattered stepladder, and attached duct tape to the top of it was a hot water hose and a cold water hose coming together in the shower head. And that's what 55 of us shared. And the shower door was a red and white plastic check tablecloth with a paper sign that said available, and the other side was closed. And you had to try to remember to turn the sign and hope the wind didn't blow it around the other way.
Well, Lisa on Facebook says she loved your book. It was like a virtual visit to the behind-the-scenes activities of both local and major disasters. And kudos to you and to those who volunteer. And I know, let's go back to the read. You've got some readings coming up, and you're going to be visiting various places with your book.
Yes, I am. Actually, tomorrow I will be at the Hatch Public Library in Mauston at 1 p.m. talking about my book, and I'll have a lot of photos there people can see and some memorabilia that I've had from my different volunteering experiences. On Thursday, January 11th at 6:30 p.m., I'll be at the Baraboo Public Library. And on January 14th, I'll be at Arcadia Books at 2 o'clock in Spring Green. So I'm pretty excited about those events coming up.
Do you have a page where people can go to learn more about this?
Or? Absolutely. DebbieMcKinney.net is my website, and you can go there to learn more about me, more about my book. You can find a page there, which is a link to my publisher to purchase the book if you're interested. So I'd be delighted to have you visit my website at DebbieMcKinney.net. And the book's also available from the Hatch Library in Mauston and the Baraboo Library.
As well. And it's McKinney is spelled M-C-K-I-N-N-E-Y, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
I got that right. Well, you finally, after 20 years, or a little more than 20
yes,
years.
Yes, a little bit more.
You step back from it, and that's a long time.
It was hard to step back, but it was a great journey.
It had to have been, but it also had to have been, takes an emotional toll.
It did take an emotional toll. My last chapter, called Remembrance, the book, as a result of writing it, actually got me invited to the 15th anniversary of 9/11 in New York City at St. Paul's Chapel. And there was a great memorial service there for volunteers who have died since 9/11, over 600 from 9/11 related illnesses. And I was honored to be a part of that.
Well, Debbie, I want to thank you so much for writing your book, Bringing Hope, A Disaster Relief Journey, and for all your work over the years. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was a delight to be here.
Debbie McKinney, author of Bringing Hope, A Disaster Relief Journey. I hope you have a chance to take a look at it. And I hope you'll be with us tomorrow. Scott Craven comes by to talk about the world of wildlife. Thank you for listening. Please stay with us.